This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on The Grave Talks, a haunting in Arkansas. In the summer of 1983, Wesley Fox and his family moved into a brand new house in Arkansas. Should have been a perfect setting for this young family to call home and to grow in. Immediately, however, one of the family members has a vivid and disturbing dream of a baby being sacrificed in the attic of the home. Was it just a strange dream caused by the stress of moving in a new environment? This would just be the beginning of the story of a haunting in Arkansas. Shortly after the dream and getting unpacked, the family began to experience dark energy and entities in and around the house. Unexplained and supernatural occurrences happening outside of dreams and in reality, terrorizing the family for many years to come and eventually driving them out of this home.
My family moved into a large house there in Lowell, Arkansas, 8 years old. So many, many moons ago.
Sure.
We moved into the house there in Lowell, Arkansas. We had been living in at the time, you know, for several of the listeners out there that may have watched the episode of A Haunting, they would have shown it was me, my father, mother, and my sister Mary that were just living, you know, moving into this house. That is not totally correct. Now, we were the only ones that, you know, lived in there from beginning to end. Because when we first moved in, my brother Jim, which he was older at the time, I don't know exactly his age, but he's over 21 or right about 21. I think he was probably 20 or 21. But he moved in with us for about 2 weeks. But, you know, we knew as he was moving in that within a couple weeks, he was going to be moving to Arizona with family. So he was only there for, you know, about 2 weeks. And then the episode also had it to where basically Mary and I were the only, you know, siblings from Jesse and Carol Fox. Mm-hmm. Totally, there was six of us all together. I just happened to be the youngest, and Mary was the second youngest. Well, now, we had all been kind of living in a trailer there outside of Lowell just a little bit, and we'd lived there for a couple of years, but it was too cramped because, you know, some of the other siblings sometimes, you know, if things were going bad or something in their own family and they needed a place to live, you know, my mom and dad would never shut their door to anybody when it comes to their kids. Even if we were cramped, you know, we would all stay together. So everyone had a roof on their head. And that's kind of, you know, the way mom and dad was. Mm-hmm. So, but after a little while, you know, when they had an opportunity, you know, they knew they wanted something bigger, to accommodate everybody if needed to at different times. So the house came open and it was rented by the cannery where my dad worked. So my dad had known of the place for, you know, a long time. But the plant manager one day just happened to say, "Hey, Jesse, are you still looking for a bigger house?" Because the house came open you know, and if you guys are interested in it, you guys can look at it and see what you think. So, you know, mom and dad went and looked at it one day. They loved it. I mean, the house, I couldn't tell you how many square feet it was, but it was just absolutely huge. It was, not real sure on how old it was, but gathered, it sounds like it was built in the early 1900s, late 1800s.
So what was the attitude when you first got into the house, when, you know, your parents, you know, thrilled you're going from a smaller place to a bigger place? How are you guys feeling about it as kids?
As kids, I mean, I know I was excited, and so was Mary.
Sure.
Because the layout of the house, I mean, and I'll get into that just a little bit more because it's kind of important. Mm-hmm. The house, when you first walk in off the main street, you walk into the living room, and it's just huge. And then the next room, of course, you got your dining room, which was like the only carpeted room in the house that I can think of. And then there's the kitchen, and of course, the back door. You got that back door, and my dad could walk maybe 25 foot. Well, I'll say 50 yards. And then he was right there to where he worked at the cannery. But you go, the kitchen, it almost could be like a circle because you can circle back around from the kitchen. You go, there's a hallway that you can either go upstairs, downstairs to the basement, and there's a beautiful French doors you would walk by going upstairs that would lead back into the living room. So upstairs you got the master bedroom on the far left, and then right next to it was the master, the main bathroom, and then you had another room which was either going to be my room, which ended up being my playroom, and then you walk up like 8 stairs or so, and then there's your attic. So big place. And then down in the basement, you had one basement room, and then I think another one, and then you had two small apartments, which that's, to me, that's kind of the important part, because those apartments, the original plan was, and this is why Mary was so excited, is that Dad was going to, you know, fix one of those up, and that was going to be her own little area. And, you know, being a teenage girl at the time, you know, like to listen to loud music, stuff like that. You know, so she was excited because, you know, she can get listen to her music, do whatever she wanted. Sure. But so, you know, moving in, we were all excited. At first, Jim, since he was going to be there for 2 weeks, he was going to stay in the attic. That was going to be his room. You know, of course, master bedroom, mom and dad. The middle room was supposed to be mine. But in that big, scary house at that time, there was no way you were going to catch me sleeping in that room by myself. Hell no.
So initially, what is frightening you about this house? Is it just because it's big and it's new? Is there anything else that's?
It was big, it was new, and at the time, I was a complete chicken.
Okay.
I really was. But I ended up compromising with mom and dad to where I slept, because that master bedroom was, I mean, it was gigantic. So they slept, you know, in their bed, and I slept in my own little cot against the far wall. And, of course, there was still plenty of room, you know. And then eventually, within a couple of weeks, I was going to, you know, go, you know, kind of work my way into the bedroom. Mm-hmm. But it just never happened that way because too many things start happening.
Okay.
And then, of course, once things start happening, there was definitely no way you were going to catch me anywhere alone in that house.
So take us to the place where it goes from just new house, you know, kind of curious about it being new, and there's kind of the scary aspect of that, but when it actually transitions and there's something that happens in this house, what's the first thing that happens that is out of the ordinary?
Well, the very first thing that happened, and they didn't really think about it a whole lot at that time, but Mary and Jim, the night before we officially moved in, they took over like a load of stuff, and they ended up staying in the house trying to help get it ready for mom and dad bringing most of the stuff the next morning. Mm-hmm. But Mary that night had horrible, just graphic nightmares to where she was walking in the house, and then she ended up in the attic. And then she, as she's, you know, in the attic, she sees all these people in black robes, except for one of them had a red robe, and they were doing chants and some type of ritual thing. And then all of a sudden she heard a baby crying, and she looked, and this thing was basically sacrificing a baby. And of course it was, you know, very vivid for her, scared the heck out of her. She woke up, and then, you know, she ended up going right back to sleep. And then she was right back into that same dream. But this time she was downstairs, almost like she was trying to catch these babies as they fell. Cause they, do one, you know, send it down this like little slide, and then she was trying to catch it. And it was just like that for the rest of the night. So she finally woke up and stayed up the rest of the night. We didn't think anything about it at that time, other than just really weird dream.
Sure.
The next morning, after we get, you know, me and mom and dad come over, we get to kind of get things situated a little bit. You know, after moving's done, I decide to go out on my bike and just kind of explore my new neighborhood, basically. So I rode my bike, you know, across railroad tracks into the little area, which at the time was a trailer park, and I still think there's a few trailers over there. But some kids were sitting outside. They said, "Hey, are you new?" I said, "Well, yeah. Where do you live at?" And I was able to point, and you could see the house where we were at. I said, "I live right there." Those kids looked at me and said, "That house is haunted." Like, "No, it's not. You guys are just kids. You're crazy. There ain't no such thing as ghosts," was what I told them. Mm-hmm. And so that would be like the first inkling that possibly something's wrong.
Did you?
But at 8 years old, you know, I'm thinking kids are being kids, you know.
Sure. Did the kids have any stories as to why it was haunted or what the ghost legend is of the house at that time before you had any experiences happen?
There was one kid, and I ended up becoming pretty good friends with him. He said, and I don't remember exactly if he told me right then and there or just a little bit later, but he said he had went into that house, and he was probably 2 years older than I was. So he's probably 10, maybe 11. But he said just a couple months before, he snuck into the house at night and on like a little dare from some of the other kids. And like I said, the way the house is set up, you can go through one door in the living room and walk all the way through the house, and the back door would be back by the kitchen. He said that he, you know, no one was living there. He snuck in one door, and as he's walking through, he sees like this huge blue ball. Mm-hmm. And what some people today would call like an orb, but it really wasn't an orb. It was just like a huge blue ball. He said it came from the French doors as he was walking in. So, of course, he picked up his pace and tried to hurry up and go out the back door. And the back door, he said he could not get it to budge. It was locked. He just could not get it open no matter what he did. So finally, he was able to run back through the front door, and he was able to get out. He said that just terrified the heck out of him.
That would lead a child to say that this house is haunted. Certainly.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, the rumors even before he went in there, of course, was that was the neighborhood haunted house. Mm-hmm. So that's why he was doing, you know, the dare.
Sure.
So that just kind of confirmed for him. But the funny part is, you know, him and I became really good friends within like a week. And then his mom needed someone to babysit him. And of course, there was my sister, Mary. So Mary ended up babysitting him in that house.
Oh, wow.
The funny part. It wasn't so funny then, but it is now.
Sure. So you hear this story, these rumors at your house that you just moved into, that you already have some fears about, is haunted. What happens after that?
Like things going on?
Yeah,
or
like what were some of the first occurrences for you personally or your family beyond the dream? Because I know the dream was kind of the precursor, but what were some of the things, the first things that physically went on in the home that made everyone go,
there's
something
one
here.
More incident that kind of took place that at the time wasn't nothing, but it became something
okay.
A lot later on. It would have been like when that first, not the first day we moved in, but the very next day we had a family barbecue. And we were all sitting out there in the front, you know, barbecuing. And a car stopped by. And they asked my dad, "Are you the man of the house?" My dad said, "Yes." And my dad walked over to him. The guy leaned over, whispered something in his ear, and then drove off really fast. And my mom asked my dad, "What did he say?" And dad said, "Oh, it's just a bunch of crazy locals." And they left it at that. We get towards the end of the story when we found out, and then I'll tell the listeners what was said to my dad.
Okay.
But that night, you know, dad, you know, mom and dad go to bed. I'm in bed. Mary's staying up watching a movie. You know, she's sitting on the couch there in the living room. And during a commercial, she gets up and gets her like a glass of tea, something like that. When she comes back, she's seen that the French doors, you know, by where she was sitting at, was opened up a little bit. You know, probably like 6 inches, you know, nothing major. So she shuts them and she sets back down. Well, next commercial, she gets up, goes into the kitchen. She comes back and the doors are open about 6 inches again. So she's like, okay, that was just kind of making her think, okay, what's going on? So this time, you know, she sits down and she's kind of watching the doors out of the corner of her eye, mm-hmm. you know, trying to watch her movie. But now at this point, she can't even concentrate because she's worried about those doors. And all of a sudden, the door handles start jiggling. And then within a few moments, the doors burst open. So, of course, Mary, you know, she gets scared and she runs out those doors and runs upstairs up into what was going to be my playroom. She got in there because she was scared for a minute. Not knowing that, you know, I guess you kind of assume, but, you know, my mom at the time was, you kept her awake or anything. She's pretty grouchy because, you know, she had to get up like at, I want to say at 3 a.m. to be out the door by 4:30 or something like that. But, you know, Mary, as she ran in there and jumped and hid underneath the covers, she hears her door open. So it kind of scares her a minute, but then it's just mom. And she was, now, Mary, you know, I have to get up early in the morning. And why do you keep on running up and down the stairs and keeping me awake? You left the TV on and everything else. You know, she's angry saying this to her. So Mary felt like she was going to walk down the green mile because mom made her walk down the stairs and turn off the TV. And so Mary, you know, she walked down the stairs, turned TV, and then kind of ran up the stairs again just as softly as possible, not so she wouldn't get in trouble again. Me and Mary was laughing about that here, about 4 or 5 years ago. We were laughing about that. And then mom kind of feels bad about it today, knowing what we know now.
Sure.
About that same time, we didn't find out until later that Dad had an experience that night, too. Because before Mary's incident, you know, probably an hour or so before, Dad got up after he'd fallen asleep and he, you know, went to the restroom. And, you know, being pretty much the only one awake, he's got, you know, the door open. He's got just going in there and going to the bathroom, usually like men do, you know. Mm-hmm. But as he's going to the bathroom, he looks, something caught his attention. So he kind of turned to his left a little bit, which he would have been facing, you know, the stairs in the hallway there. And once again, he sees this huge blue ball, kind of like that kid described.
Yeah.
And it kind of floats up by him, almost like it's trying to get his attention, and then floats into the attic, almost like it wanted him to follow it. And my dad just shook it off. He's like, you know what? I drank too many beers today. That's why I've seen this. No other reason. So he didn't think about it, and he didn't say nothing about it to anybody. So something's happening to him, but he's just not admitting it at that moment. Now, move on just, you know, a couple days. I know Mary, after, I think mom was at work still, and dad would have been at work, and I was off playing with my friends, but something scared her into the kitchen, like brushed up against her, and, you know, she felt like a wind off something when there was, you know, no way for any air to stir in or anything before she even had a fan going, you know. And it was just like a brush of really cold air, and we're talking the middle of July, it's where it was really hot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it spooked her, but she didn't try to think too much about it. She thought, you know, new house, we're not used to such a big house, so I'll just sit outside a minute, you know, gather my bearings, no big deal. Now, one of the next things would have happened to myself, I do believe, and that would have been, probably a week later. I was sleeping in my cot, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I'd seen what I described to my parents at the time as Laura Ingalls standing at the foot of my bed, because, you know, she was wearing the old dress like Laura Ingalls Wilder would have.
Sure.
She had her hair in a braid like she did, same type dress, you know, all that. And separate, you know, I told my parents that she had braces on her legs. It was like, you know, the big difference. And, you know, the little girl was just kind of staring at me. And, of course, being the chicken I was at the time, it took me two jumps to go from my cot to my parents' bed. And, of course, you know, they woke mom and dad up, the thud, me landing. And I'm like, you know, there's something over there. And, of course, you know, there was nothing there at that point. And they figured I was just being, you know, chicken, had a nightmare or something.
Sure.
But so that was like my first paranormal experience, really.
What was going through your mind when you had that first paranormal experience? Were you trying to rationalize it? Tell me.
I was hoping I was dreaming, but at the same time, I was trying, you know, tell myself, I don't know, I was trying to tell myself I was dreaming, and I was telling myself, oh my God, you know, my worst fear is coming true. Those kids were right. This house is haunted. But I was trying to tell my, you know, like I said, you know, that it was almost like you had your angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other telling you one thing, the other telling you the other.
Sure.
That's how it was at first, and then it happened again probably about a week later, except for it was different. This time, it was a dark-hooded figure that was standing over my bed. That terrified me like no other. I just happened to look up, you know, kind of open my eyes, look up, and there it was, and it kind of growled towards me. And that's, once again, I mean, I jumped towards my parents' bed real quick, and this time I tried to wake them up. It's like, hey, you know, look. And they would not budge. No matter how much I pushed and pulled on them, they would not wake up. And of course, after the thing disappeared, they woke up.
Are they believing you when you tell them what you're seeing yet? No.
At this time, absolutely not. No. That's and Mary, because, you know, during this time, Mary was still having other issues as well. She was hearing voices like she would hear Mary, and it would sound almost like mom's voice, but it wasn't. And then, of course, Mary would look around and nobody's there. Mom and dad's both in bed. Mom and Mary, after the first 2 weeks or so, start fighting like cats and dogs. I mean, just horribly. Mary was being blamed because mom was hearing stuff. You know, she was hearing, like, Mary standing up all night playing cards. And, you know, she hears something hitting the table, like, you know, cards. Mom's thought was she was playing slapjack. To where I come to find out, Mary was asleep and actually was asleep for a couple hours at that point. But, you know, Mary was being blamed for it, and that caused a lot of tension between them two. Because, you know, mom just did not believe for a long time that stuff was happening. And neither did dad. Even after dad's, I think it was dad's second experience, which would have been after about the second week. His weekend ritual, you know, he had usually Saturdays, Sundays off. If he was lucky, anyway, he'd have both days off. But at least on Sundays, and this would have been within the first 2 weeks, because I think Jim was still there. Because my dad, you know, I've said this a lot, you know, I thought my dad was the best dad in the world anyone could ever have. He was very good at being a dad, at doing, you know, the dad type stuff. But at the same time, you know, dad was, if he could have somebody else do what he was supposed to do, well, he'd push it off on them in a heartbeat. Like taking my mom to the store because my mom didn't drive. You know, she never has drove a day in her life because, you know, she has bad nerves and she just didn't even want to deal with it. So, you know, if dad could get Jim to take mom to the store, Jim was taking mom to the store, not dad. So on Sundays, what would happen is Jim would take mom and myself and Mary all to the store, to go to the grocery store, stuff like that. And then dad would stay home and generally take a nap. So, you know, we all leave. Dad's upstairs in the master bedroom, kind of laying down. He just put his book down. You know, he's starting to doze off, and then all of a sudden he feels these really cold hands rubbing his face. And they're kind of just touching it a little bit, real lightly, and then starts actually, you know, rubbing a little bit harder to where he knows it feels like hands. Well, he looks up, finally, and there's nobody there. And dad knew that he was the only one in the house. So dad said, heck with this. And he got up from the master bedroom, went down, sat in the kitchen. And mom thought it was kind of strange that dad was sitting in the kitchen and not, you know, taking his nap like he was said he was going to be. But dad just said, oh, I couldn't sleep. It was the only thing he told her then.
So he's starting to get some signs that there's something going on here.
Right. Yeah. But at the same time, he's not admitting it.
Sure.
Because once again, in his trying to rationalize things, he's trying to say, well, maybe I drank too much earlier. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that dad liked to drink beer. Mm-hmm. He really did, but it wasn't nothing like, you know, alcoholic type. Mm-hmm. But you know, he'd drink 4 or 5 and, you know, be ready for a nap and call it good sometimes, or come home from work, drink 3 or 4 and go to bed. I mean, you know, nothing major.
Sure.
But that's how he kind of rationalized it with that. And then it seemed like kind of about the same time, little bit by little bit, things start happening to mom. And mom started noticing everything else because right about a week after we started moving in, Mary started babysitting my niece Lisa. Now, this was, of course, not mentioned on the haunting at all. But Lisa was my sister Carol, which is there's 3 boys, 3 girls with them, you know, me and my siblings. And Carol was the oldest girl. But her and her husband worked night shift over at the cannery. So my sister Mary would watch her daughter, which at the time I think was 1.5. And Lisa was scared to death of the house. She absolutely did not want to go upstairs. You know, you could almost keep her downstairs sometimes to where she was okay, but it's almost like she was having almost constant panic attacks. Something was terrorizing that little girl, and we didn't know it, of course. One of the first things that stick out in my mind that happened to her is Carol dropped her off, and right after Carol left, you know, Lisa was getting really whiny and crying, and Mom said, you know what, why don't you take her upstairs, put a bath on, and see if that helps. So Mary did that, and about that same time, Mom was going upstairs into her room to do something, laundry, I assume. But Mary's got the bath water running, you know, the water temperature's perfect, and Mom hollers at Mary. So Mary, you know, she don't step out of the bathroom. Well, she just kind of stick her head around the corner just a little bit, you know, and said, Mom, what was that? And about that time, Lisa starts screaming at the top of her lungs, and Mary hurries up, you know, picks her up and looks at her. There's no marks on her. You know, the water's not hot. You know, she don't know what's going on. And Mom, of course, that got Mom's attention. So Mom's in there, and Mom's like, you know, checking her over. And Mom said, Mary, just take her outside and stroll her, you know, stroll her off, you know, up, you know, to the other side of the parking lot or something, see if that helps. So Mary got her, you know, got her dressed, got her outside, and as soon as she stepped over the property wire, Lisa stopped crying. Everything, it just like stopped, like nothing ever happened. Mary strolled her, I don't know how long that night, but she strolled her, you know, quite a bit, and then she was asleep. As soon as Mary got stepped over into the property, Lisa woke up and started screaming again. And that went on, you know, often about that. You know, the kids would be whiny, and then you take them off the property and they're fine. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that happened. But then, and, you know, Mom noticed it. Mom knew, I think, you know, when stuff like that was happening more often, Mom started realizing, you know, there has to be something wrong here. But after 2 weeks, Jim moves out, and then Mary kind of moves her bedroom up to the attic. Now, the usual way things would work is, because since, you know, Mary couldn't get Lisa to go up the stairs, she would lay down with her in the living room until Carol came and woke her up, you know, picked Lisa up, and then she would go up into her bed up in the attic. That's the normal. Mm-hmm. One evening, you know, like I said, Mom gets up at, you know, right around 3, and she's in the kitchen getting her lunch ready, and she knew Carol had already come and got Lisa. And then she hears Mary in the living room still, and she says, and Mary just says, ouch. So Mom's like, what? So, you know, Mom goes in the living room, checks on her, checks on Mary, and said, hey, Mary, you okay? Mary sat up and just kind of looked around, and she's like, yeah, I'm fine. Mary lays back down. Mom goes in the living room. A few minutes later, you know, Mom's trying to, you know, trying to hurry up and finish because, you know, her ride's going to be there about any minute at this point. Mm-hmm. She hears Mary again say, ouch. So Mom goes in and checks on Mary. So Mary, are you okay? I've got to get ready for work. You know, whatever's going on, you need to get it fixed. And, you know, Mary sits up, she opens her eyes, and she can see Mom standing in front of her. But behind Mom is this figure, and it's a guy in like a black suit. She said she couldn't see his face. She said, you know, where his face was supposed to be, there was just like nothing there. But she knew that the man walked with a cane. You know, she could see the cane and kind of hunched over, you know, kind of an older man. Mm-hmm. But Mary, you know, she tries to tell Mom and talk, but, you know, nothing would come out. It was like only air. So, you know, Mom walks out. She hears the car horn of her ride. So Mom hurries up, goes out to her ride. Mary, in the meantime, thought, well, maybe I was sleeping or dreaming. So she lays back down. And then she feels like a burning sensation in her leg. And she hears a voice that, get up. Mary sat up, looks around, and she sees that man. And he taps his cane on the floor and says, get up. Mary, you know, she don't move, so he smacked her in the leg with his cane and said, get up. So Mary sat up. She went in and sat at the kitchen table. And the man at that time, once again, was right beside her, tapping his cane, you know, tapping it three times and slapping her leg and said, "Get up." And this happened, you know, Mary went to like every room in the house except for something told her not to go in the attic or the basement. So she went in all the other rooms. She even tried to take a bath. And within a few minutes, the guy was like right there, almost like being like a perv peeping Tom on her. So she hurries up, you know, gets the soap out of her hair and gets dressed. And then she sits down by the bed by my dad because he's, you know, he didn't have to get up for work yet. But as soon as she reached over and touched my dad, that figure disappeared. The next morning, you know, Mary woke up in mom and dad's bed like, "Oh, hell, what am I doing here?" Almost like she didn't remember what it was at first. And then that day, my dad came home for lunch, which, you know, dad came up for lunch every day. Mary would get him a sandwich and get him a glass of tea. Well, as she's, you know, she wore like a sundress, I guess they call it. Mm-hmm. And she had been over just enough that the sundress came up on her, off her, you know, up to her about her knee. And dad seen these huge bruises on her legs. And my dad just, you know, instantly got really angry. Like, "Mary, you know, what the hell are you letting your boyfriend hit you? And you didn't tell me," you know, almost like, you know, dad was blaming her boyfriend for beating her. And Mary's like, no, you know, he wouldn't do that. He's not that type of person. Yeah. "Well, how do you explain those bruises? Blah, blah, blah." And dad's just going at it. He's angry. And, you know, Mary just did not remember anything then. You know, but Mary seen the bruises and they were just, and they looked, you know, kind of like the thin, almost like a cane. Mm-hmm. But we just didn't see it. But I think it was like 2 days later, she started getting these little, you know, part of her memory, a little at a time. And then that's when she kind of remembered exactly what happened. And of course, dad, when he was told, he kind of believed it, but he kind of didn't still. Mm-hmm. Still on the edge of not believing. So things were really starting, I think, to ramp up everywhere at this point. Because I know at that time, for myself, I was scared to death to do hardly anything. You know, if I had to go to the bathroom at night or anything else like that, I'd rather die than have to go to the bathroom at that point. Yeah. At night, because it was just scary. I want to say it was probably 2 weeks before we moved out, my sister Barb, which is the middle girl in the family, she had come over in the middle of the night. You know, Mary was up, and she was telling Mary that her and her husband, her boyfriend Ralph, needed somewhere to stay for her and her, Ralph, and the baby Mark, because they had an experience at their house. And, you know, at that time, they said that there was a dark figure, and Barb ended up getting like a bite on her back. Mm-hmm. And of course, it scared the crap out of her. So that's why they moved into the house with us. Which the funny part was, you know, she was telling my dad about this. and enough stuff had already happened to different people. The dad was like, "Well, you know, yeah, you know, of course you can move in, but I'm not going to tell you it's going to be any better over here."
Yeah.
And that was actually the same day that dad went, and the next day Barb asked dad to take her over to get some of her stuff while her boyfriend was at work. And then on the way back, or after they got back to the house, after we got back to the house, my mother was angry because there was a circuit breaker that had went off down in the subcellar. And that's where had the washer and dryer, and she was not mechanically inclined. She hasn't been mechanically inclined for years. But she sent dad down there to, you know, to change the circuit out. So dad goes down there, and dad's kind of fixing it, working on it, or whatever. And about that time, my sister Carol comes over. She brings Lisa, and they're wanting to find dad. So Carol goes, and they told dad where dad was. So, you know, she kind of sneaks up behind dad. She sees that his back's to her. So, you know, she's going to be a smart aleck and grab his sides and go, "Boo." And dad jumped about 6 foot in the air, turned pale white. Carol was like, "What the heck? You know, why'd that scare you so bad?" They get outside because, you know, at that point, dad was done. But dad starts kind of telling her a little bit about some of the stuff that's going on. And that was Carol's first idea of anything going on other than her daughter was scared of the house. But she had no idea.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Wesley Fox about a haunting in Arkansas. In part two, what did the local crazy man in the car say to Wes's dad as he drove by one night? What was the breaking point where the father finally decided to do something about the haunting of this house? Also, what did the church think when the family brings their story to them for help? Did the prayers that were said in the home help calm the dark energy? What kind of supernatural violence began to take place in the house? Who eventually did come in to help rid this home of its dark spirits? We'll have all those questions answered and more in part two of our interview. You can hear it when you become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of this program, The Grave Talks. Go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper, or go directly to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Your $5 a month donation and support of this show keeps us on the air. You'll get access to every single part two of our show, as well as access to our episodes months before they go public. Quite oftentimes, 5 to 10 full episodes, part one and part two, are posted there for you months before they go public. It's a great way to support the program and get a whole bunch of extra episodes to binge away on. Patreon.com/thegravetalks to hear part two and get access to all of our premium content. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.